And we have a really busy show for you today. We have two guests that will be appearing both at the same show. They will be at Greenfield's Hawks in Reed on the 17th, which is a week from today. And we're going to start it off with one of those guests. This is Hubby Jenkins from his most recent release.
Lord, I seen my baby get on down Frisco line. Lord, I seen my baby get on down Frisco line. Oh, Lord. Sun rose this morning, I laid out all my clothes. Lord, that sun was shining, I laid out all my clothes. Hear that voice, kept on talking. Lord, I hear that voice, kept on talking. What you say? Oh, Lord. Gone away, baby. Don't you wanna go? Lord, I'm going somewhere never been before. Said, baby, don't you want it? Lord, I'm gone somewhere I never been before. Come on, baby, know you want to.
Hubby Jenkins is an extraordinary musician who came to his success the hard way, busking in the subways of New York City, touring coffee shops around the country. But in 2010, he entered a newly arranged and newly minted Carolina Chocolate Drops, and success has followed him ever since. He comes back to the Pioneer Valley this following weekend and as a solo performer at Greenfield's Hawks in Reed next Saturday, November 17th. Hubby, welcome to 9 Volt Heart.
Hey, thanks for having me.
It's great to see you. We saw a very short version of your set in Carrboro, North Carolina, a couple weeks back, and hoping you have a lot more time to play in the Hawks of Reed than you did in Carrboro's Music Fest.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think I'll have a little bit more time, and we'll get through a few more songs and a few more stories. Sure.
Yeah, well, we love the stories. And what I wanted to ask you is, you know, the role of singer-songwriter, folk singer, old-time musician, just pick whichever phrase you like. It seems to me like you're as much a historian and a musicologist as you are a singer-songwriter. It seems like an important role for you. Is that accurate or fair?
Yeah, you know, I never went to college, and I don't have a degree in it, so I feel weird calling myself an actual musicologist or historian. But I find that part of my message has been the importance of knowing the roots of where you're from, knowing the roots of what you love, and it helps us understand today a lot better and understand why things are the way they are,
yeah,
if you will. And also just as an you know, as being a black performer who plays old-time music, I find a lot of black performers have this period where they're kind of hermited with the music and they dig deep into the history and find the sense of empowerment and strength through understanding the roots of American music in that way as well.
Well, I have Kaya Cater on next week, and she's going to be in a similar way telling a new story. I don't know if you know her most recent album, but it basically speaks about her family's background from Grenada and from Canada. And, you know, she does write most of her material. Now, which leads me to the next question, of course, is that you are interpreting some pretty old pre-war blues tunes on your newest release. And it seems to be my favorite style of country blues, as I call it. Where did you, there has to be a gateway for this particular style of music for you. And I know what my gateway album was, but what was your first entry into what the country blues would become for you?
I think I can think of two. One would probably be Bob Dylan's first record. Before I even really knew what country blues was, I was listening to a lot of like Chuck Berry and Bo Diddley and some 60s stuff. And I was in a band where we were heavily influenced by Bob Dylan. And when I heard his first album, I learned that, you know, many of the songs on there were covers. You know, he covers Buck Wyatt on there, et cetera. And so that led me to try and find out who those people were. The rediscovery, if you will. And then I had a friend make me a mixtape or mixed CD, and the first track on the album was Skip James' Devil Got My Woman Blue. And it came for me right after a very terrible breakup, or a hard breakup. It wasn't that terrible. and the song just made sense, and the blues finally made complete sense to me. But also I was amazed at how powerful one man with a guitar could be, or one person with a guitar could be. You know, Skip James was more powerful than Led Zeppelin and all their stacks and everything at that time, you know?
Yeah. Now, I actually have the first Bob Dylan album in my hand right here, and you're right, there's Bucka White, there's Blind Willie Johnson, there's Curtis Jones, Reverend Gary Davis, Mississippi Fred McDowell, Blind Lemon Jefferson, and this is a Bob Dylan album.
Exactly. And just to show how much, you know, in that time period, you know, growing up in New York, I didn't know that festivals existed. I didn't know that fiddle competitions were happening. You know, our connection to old-time music was the West Village scene.
Mm-hmm.
And the rediscovery, quote-unquote rediscovery, of all these old artists who were found, you know. So they're very much so intertwined, you know, together.
Yeah. Now, I wanted to go back to your early musical education. You grew up in Brooklyn. You went to Brooklyn Technical High School. Were you in the band? And like, did you have musical influences early on before the Bob Dylan moment? You obviously were in a band or a number of bands, I expect.
Yeah, when I grew up playing saxophone. I played saxophone from about the age of 5 until about sophomore year of high school.
Mm-hmm.
And then I switched to classical music and started playing cello and viola and bass. And then through the bass, that's when I started playing with friends and bands and picked up a little drums and stuff like that. But my whole life, I guess, has just been playing music. And as a kid, my mom always had conga drums and stuff in the house, and we had cookouts and stuff like that. People would come and play. So also always been around music.
So it's not like what we would necessarily consider the average Brooklyn musical education. You have some pretty interesting roots with both classical, jazz, and what you grew up listening with your parents. It's a pretty interesting introduction to being a string band musician.
You know, my folks both have very eclectic taste in music, and so I heard a lot of different kinds of music growing up, and then growing up in Bed-Stuy when I was really young, I was there early 90s hip-hop, you know, what I consider the last, like, folk art form.
Mm-hmm.
I was around for all that, too. So, I think it's paved the way for me to be very open about what kind of, you know, receiving music and accepting music and hearing it. But, and also, you know, like learning that the banjo was a black instrument was a big epiphany for me. You know, growing up, I was like, yeah, black people rap and they do R&B and jazz. Like, that's it. And then Lenny Kravitz came out with one of his tracks. And I was like, oh, snap, black people do this too. And everyone was like, yeah, here's a Jimi Hendrix CD. You didn't know, you know? Uh-huh. And then when I got to Bo Diddley and Chuck Berry, I was like, whoa, they turned country music into rock and roll? That's crazy. And then when I got to the banjo and learned that it was a black instrument, it just connected all these things to me, all the music that I've been hearing growing up. And it just put it all together for me in a very passionate way.
And my guest, Hubby Jenkins, has a brand new release that does summarize what he's been speaking about here. He has a lot of country blues, and we're going to hear a traditional tune called Kareen Kareen.
I love Corina, love Corina, I love Corina, love Corina, Lord have mercy, baby please don't leave me, please don't leave me, baby please don't leave me, way down in the valley, Lord have mercy, don't believe she left me, believe she left me. Don't believe she left me. Don't believe she left me. Lord have mercy. Down in the bottom, way down in the bottom. Down in the bottom, way down in the bottom. Lord have mercy. Who's that yonder? Tell me who's that yonder? Who's that yonder? Coming down the road, road, Lord have mercy. Look like little Maggie, like little Maggie. Look like little Maggie, but she go too slow, slow. Lord have mercy. Lord, please tell her hurry. Tell her come hurry. Tell her come hurry. Tell her come hurry. Lord have mercy. Who's that yonder? Tell me who's that yonder? Who's that yonder? Look like Alberta. Lord have mercy. I left Alberta. Left Alberta. I left Alberta. Way across the sea, sea. Lord have mercy. That fool got drowned. Fool got drowned. That fool got drowned. Swimming out to meet me, Lord have mercy.
Now, I wanted to ask you, because in between, you know, 2010 and your epiphany about, you know, your own folk music beginnings, there was a time where you did a ton of busking and traveling. I just wondered, because I often admire people who go and busk for a living or busk just to practice. What did you find the value of busking, besides maybe making a few dollars on the side in the subways of New York City?
A lot. You know, when I first started performing, I had terrible stage fright. I would shake uncontrollably and be so afraid. So busking really helped me just to get rid of that. You know, when people were just walking by and busy about their day, I felt less bashful about performing. It also helped me to emote, mm-hmm. to learn how to really, you know, I had to learn how to use a microphone, really, you know, because I was just so used to belting. And but I kind of enjoy that I have that in me to really fill a room, fill a space, control the air around me like that, and confidence. You know, like just getting, you know, getting a buck sometimes for a song is more than just the buck. You know,
yeah.
It's like, yeah, someone's like, that sounds good. You're right. You know, here's some money, and that's good too. You know,
it sure is. And you know, it takes courage. And you know, I know about the whole blind Hubby Jenkins stories that you were really not confident when you first began, you know, in terms of performing in front of people. And you've come an awfully long way, my friend. In 2010, you joined the Carolina Chocolate Drops during a time where they were creatively expanding as well as expanding the sound. Layla McCullough, Adam Matter, yourself were all adding to that sound. Could you take us back to maybe how that collaboration happened and what it was like to join that band at that particular time?
Sure. To do a short version of it, I'd met the band used to have a manager named Tim Duffy. I met his brother and his then ex-wife, they're both great musicians. And I met them through a show called Roots and Ruckus, which a friend of mine, Farrell Foster, was running and still runs.
Yep.
And through them, and then also meeting Dom, the year that the Chocolate Drop started, Dom met my roommate and crashed at my house. And Black Guy with a Banjo. Whoa, Black Guy with a Banjo. So we had that whole thing. And so Justin Robinson quit the band, and I got a phone call from both Dom and from Tim, the manager, asking me if I played violin, and I said no. And they said, cool, you want to be the new banjo player in the Chocolate Drops? Uh-huh. And at the time, I was solo, I started playing my very first festivals and, like, kind of traveling, getting closer to being more legitimate in my touring and traveling and... And I was with Peter Stample of Holy Modal Rounders when I got the call to join the band. And he gave me the final push. He was like, you should do it. Go for it. And so it was really interesting to see, you know, this band was kind of established and our philosophies were aligned. You know, at the time it was just like, hey, the banjo is a black instrument, everybody. And here's this visceral reaction you can have to seeing black performers playing in these spaces, you know. So it was interesting to join a band that was aligned with me in that way, to be on another level. They were on a higher level, whatever you want to call it in that respect. And then, being able to come in where it wasn't so much like, hey, learn all these songs and play this way. It was like, hey, we're creating something new.
Yeah,
so
that's what I was.
Got to be a part of shaping it and felt free and less nerve-wracking. And and then we made a Grammy-nominated album out of that. So.
Yeah, Leaving Eden. And we're going to hear a cut from Leaving Eden, which was released in 2012 with the larger version of the Carolina Chocolate Drops, including Layla McCullough and my guest, Hubby Jenkins. Here's one from that album called West End Blues.
He was a handsome man, daddy was a dancing man.
So I had to ask if there was a possibility, if there'd be a reunion or a new Carolina Chocolate Drops under that name. So I presume that there really isn't a collective under that name at this point?
No, not at this point, you know, but it's kind of interesting to, I was thinking about the Grand Ole Opry the other day. I've been listening to this podcast, Cocaine and Rhinestones.
Yeah.
And, it got me thinking about the Grand Ole Opry, and I remember one of the last times we were there, the security guard was walking me and Malcolm Parsons around, who came in after Layla.
Yep.
And he was telling us the list of all the black performers who had played there, and it was something like a dozen people, and half of them came through Carolina Chocolate Drops.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, there's definitely something there. There's some main root that we're all sprouting out of from, and yeah.
Well, it's definitely spurning a lot of incredible careers, and I think we have the collective to thank for that. I was curious because you guys did get to tour and open for Bob Dylan. Did you get a chance to meet him finally after making this whole full circle thing about your education in the blues?
Yes, I did. I actually got to meet him, I think, the first year that I was with Carolina Chocolate Drops. Like, I almost quit the band. I was like, oh, I think I've made it. Thank you very much, everyone. but we met him, and it was very underwhelming. He came out for, like, 2 seconds. He shook everyone's hand, said something that no one understood, and then walked away. And then some manager came over and was just like, don't talk to Bob Dylan, don't look at Bob Dylan, don't think about Bob Dylan. But it was still a magical moment to shake that man's hand. I hope he felt it too.
Yeah. Now, he obviously has quite a few blues-oriented things as well. I was curious if you thought the blues, especially what we call the country blues or the old-time music that you've put on your latest album, do you think it's connected to today's youth in any way? Do you think especially in any race, really, but a certain age, do you think it's disconnected? The blues seem to, they seem to be marginalized. Are you hopeful for, say, the old-time authenticity of this music versus pop music? Or can you speak to what we might hope for these songs? because I see them as songs of resistance. You know, I see them as preserving a culture and a history and an awareness that I would think that the youth of today would find valuable.
You know, yeah, that's a heavy question. I love old-time music. I love the blues, and I agree with you when you say that it has merit as being political, resistant music. I think that it's timeless. I think it speaks to universal truth in a way that is, I was going to use the word basic, but that's not the word. Common, simple. So I think that it will last for a very long time. I was actually in a car at a cab last night, and they were blasting Z100, which is like the pop music station here.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, no one's going to care about this song in 5 years. You know, but like, the Voyager that's traveling around in outer space has a golden disc on it. And the first track on it is Blind Willie Johnson's Cold as a Night, Dark was the Ground. Dark was the Night, Cold as the Ground. That's the first thing that aliens think about when they think about humanity. It's going to be a blind, poor black man from almost 100 years ago singing a song. And so if that doesn't say timeless in some way, I don't know what else will.
Yeah. And, you know, Hubby Jenkins recorded with Rhianna Giddens in her solo albums, and we're going to hear one here that I particularly like. It's called Don't Let It Trouble Your Mind.
Maybe you feel obligated and out of sympathy for me.
though. I'm speaking with Hubby Jenkins. He will be at the Hawks and Reed in Greenfield a week from today on the 17th, along with Eli Caitlin. And I was wanted to ask you about your Hubby Jenkins solo CD, which I presume a lot of your repertoire will be coming for this particular one. You certainly cover a lot of ground here. You know, you've got Blind Willie Johnson, you've got, Big Boy Crudup, you've got all sorts of folks, Bucca White. These are obviously artists that are important to you. How could you possibly choose? There's so many incredible artists that are in this repertoire. How did you come about with these dozen songs or so? And, you know, how did you decide your version of them? Because they're clearly not copies.
Yeah. Part of the idea for the record was to kind of have a scope of me, if you will. Mm-hmm. The opening track on the album is one of my grandfather's best friends. My grandfather passed away before I really got to know him, but it's one of his closest friends talking about his piano playing. I didn't learn until I had interviewed my grandfather's friend that my grandfather was an amazing blues piano player and played for lots of people in the town and gave it up for religion when he moved to New York from North Carolina. Mm-hmm. But kind of the scope of, like, me. So it's songs that influence me, songs that, I don't know, that I love. So that's kind of the main thing. And you also have, you know, the little skits in there that kind of give you a little more of a window.
I was going to ask you about the interludes as well. So if you'd fill us in on, you know, the concept of putting in these interludes, one about Junebug, your grandfather, and then, you know, the Who Got Killed and What Is Futurism. Those are really interesting vignettes. And I was curious, what was the idea at first, and how did you come about picking these particular ones?
Yeah, you know, so the first one I just talked about, and then Who Got Killed, I wrote Freddie Gray,
yep.
Back of a cop car. And then when that riot sort of popped off, you know, I was in Lawrence, Kansas, where people didn't care. They didn't care at all. I was like, yo, you guys know what's happening? Like, I don't even know who that is, you know? Mm. And I was filled with a lot of angry energy, and I just started writing that. The idea of how we trivialize these murders, basically.
Yes, yeah.
And then the futurism thing is two friends and at a jazz jam at Mona's, New York, every Tuesday night. Go check it out.
Uh-huh.
And just there talking to friends, and like, this idea is that you know, these are my friends, and these are ideas that are around me and are go through me. So it's just more of that window into me and how I hope I'm living, I guess.
Yeah.
To go back to the other thing, like, you know,
yeah,
I learned songs
the tunes,
by listening
yeah.
to records, and I listen to them over and over again, and I recently-ish learned about slowing them down on YouTube, which was amazing.
Yeah.
But I just do that, and I mentioned Peter Stample earlier. He really, playing with him taught me a lot about injecting myself into playing and not trying to sound exactly like the record, and feeling more freedom to make it your own. You know, you live today, you know, show it.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to ask you to pick out a particular tune that means a lot to you on this particular one, and finish our interview with that particular cut. Is there one that that stands out? That, I mean, I've been listening to it nonstop, and I have my favorites as well. But I was curious if one of them we could get a little context, a little background in order to give it some more meaning to folks who might be hearing it.
Wow. Yeah, it's actually funny. It's been a while since I've listened to the record. But,
yeah.
I guess we could go with Parchment Farm. You know, I recorded that. I recorded the bulk of the album. Bulk of it? Yeah, all mm-hmm. the music was recorded in Berlin at a friend's studio there. And my friend Carlos Santana is playing with me on Parchment Farm. And that's the first take. That's the only take we did of that.
Uh-huh.
And it just came out with that energy. And Parchment Farm for me is a very important song. You know, the prison system, the prison industry, is horrific in
mm-hmm.
this country.
Mm-hmm.
People make profit off of sending people to prison, and the roots of that are rooted in racism and turning prison labor into slave labor, and it still exists today. You know, September, we had this prison-wide strike, you know, against the injustices that are happening there. So that song, for me, helps me to talk about that and make sure that I put a message into whatever performance I'm doing and hopefully put it into this interview as well.
Yeah. And did you use Bucca White as your example for that from the 40s or Mose Allison? Which origin tune did you base that particular version off of?
So that version comes from Bucca White, but the guitar part I'm playing, I think, is actually Aberdeen with Mississippi Blues. But I think they're similar, and I'm playing the Aberdeen and singing Parchment Farm over it. But I don't know if most people catch that anyway.
Excellent. Well, Hubby, I want to thank you very much. We'll see you in a week down at the Greenfields Hawks and Reed, which is a really beautiful venue. I think you'll like it a lot. And we're going to have your support person, the person who is opening that show, Eli Caitlin, will be on the show today as well. So we'll be seeing you just down the road in a week. So be safe, and we'll see you down the road.
I appreciate it, man. I had a great time talking with you.
Thanks a lot.
Morning down on Parchment Farm. Judge, give me life this morning down on Parchment Farm. I wouldn't hate so bad, but I left my wife in mourning. I'm singing goodbye, wife, for you have done gone. I said goodbye, wife. Dawn of day, we go to work in the morning since the dawn of day, and we work all day until the work get done. I'm saying, listen, you men, I don't mean no harm. I say, listen, you men, I don't mean no harm. If you want to do good, you better stay up off of Parchment Farm. Dove, and I can't
the things that I'm scared of. But I'm not afraid of that bright glory up above. Dying's just another way to leave the ones you love. No work for the working man, just one more empty mill. Hard times in Rockingham, hard times harder still. The crows are in the kitchen, the wolves at the door. Our father's land of Eden is paradise no more. And the mockingbird can sing like the crying of a dove. And I can't tell my daughters all the things that I'm scared of. But I am not afraid of that bright glory up above. Dying's just another way to leave the ones you stayed in Eden. Her husband's got some land. An agent for the county thinks that they might make a stand. A hard life of working with nothing much to show. A long life leaving with nowhere to go. And the mockingbird can sing like the crying of a dove. And I can't tell my daughters all the things that I'm scared of. But I am not afraid of that bright glory up above. Dying's just another way to leave.
That is the Carolina Chocolate Drops, and that is the title cut of the album that my guest, Hubby Jenkins, was on, and it's called Leaving Eden.